Hague, where South Africa is urging the International Court of Justice to issue a non-binding legal opinion that Israel's occupation of Palestinian territories is illegal.
Israel, as the occupying power, is not acting in the best interests of the population under occupation and is not administering the occupied territory in good faith.
For the first time, the U.S. appears ready to support a U.N. resolution calling for a temporary ceasefire in Gaza, outside an Arctic prison in Russia. Alexei Navalny's mother makes a video plea for Vladimir Putin to release her son's body. President Biden says he hopes the opposition leader's death will convince House Republicans to approve more aid to Ukraine. No rest for the weary, rain-soaked in California. Correspondent Carter Evans.
The hits just keep coming here in Los Angeles, where they're still cleaning up from a big mudslide from the last set of storms.
CBS News Brief. I'm Deborah Rodriguez.
Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Today is spring primary election day. Voters will narrow down races for local offices like school board, county board, and city council. There's a three-way primary for Milwaukee mayor. The polls are open until 8 o'clock tonight. We'll have election updates on many Civic Media radio stations. Supporters of Wisconsin's new legislative map say they'll make elections this year more competitive. Beloit Democratic Senator Mark Spreitzer.
These are fair maps. If Republicans win a statewide election, they're going to win a majority in the legislature. If Democrats win a statewide election, we've got a shot at a majority. That's a shot we haven't had for more than a decade.
Evers signed the new district boundaries into law yesterday, a step that effectively ends a lawsuit before the Wisconsin Supreme Court. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Now here's what you need to know closer to home.
For WCFW News, I'm James Kelly. The L.E. Phillips Memorial Public Library in Eau Claire is considering adding regular Sunday hours. The library started to close on Sundays during the COVID-19 pandemic, but community feedback made it clear that residents want to be able to use it on Sundays. However, in order to open, the library will have to scale back its hours during the rest of the week. Specific changes to the weekday hours have not been decided yet, and the library will monitor traffic throughout the week to determine the best options. The Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources is reminding fishing enthusiasts that permanent ice shanty removal deadlines are at hand. According to a press release, anglers must remove their ice shanties from Wisconsin-Iowa boundary waters by Tuesday. Shanties on the Wisconsin-Minnesota boundary waters must be removed by March 1st. Shanties on inland waters south of Highway 64 must be removed by March 3rd. And shanties north of Highway 64 and on Lake Superior must be removed by March 17th. And that's what you need to know. For WCFW News, I'm James Kelly.
The Todd Allbaugh Show.
You look at Taylor Swift, she fought off the bitterness of defeat when she lost her records, when she was kind of duped by a manager. People who told her she'd never amount to anything. But it doesn't matter if you like her music or not. I'm a fan of anyone. Doesn't matter whether they're an artist or an athlete or just a common Jane or Joe. If you've overcome something in your life, you're a winner. If you've made it through, that's what it's all about.
The Todd Allbaugh Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
The Badgers fall in the rankings. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. After losing on the road to Iowa, the Wisconsin Badgers men's basketball team has dropped out of the top 25 listing. Wisconsin has lost 5 of their last 6 games. They host Maryland at the Kohl Center. Marquette falls to the number 7th ranked team in the nation. After losing by 28 to the number 1 ranked UConn Huskies, the Golden Eagles host DePaul tomorrow night. Baseball, reaction to the Brewers signing pitcher Brandon Woodruff to a new 2-year deal while he recovers this year from surgery to repair his shoulder, Brewers outfielder Christian Yelich.
Yeah, he's a great teammate. Everybody loves having Woody around, and it's just going to be big to have him around this year, you know, whatever capacity, whether, you know, he pitches or not, who knows. But just to have him around and then hopefully have him again next year ready to go will be huge for us. And I love playing with him. You know, there's nobody else I'd rather have the ball on the mound than Woody. You know, he's proved it over and over again in big games, and great competitor, great teammate, so it's really nice to have him back.
That's the Brewers' Christian Yelich. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Thank you. Sunny and a little warmer today. We'll get to 46 for a high this afternoon. The wind will be from the south at around 5 to 15. Tonight, mostly cloudy. A little more fog possible overnight tonight. Our low 27 tomorrow. A little patchy fog in the morning, then mostly sunny 47 on Thursday. Sunshine with a high of 46. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Outside now, it's 33.
After my wife died, I felt like I lost everything, including my love of fishing. But one day, my granddaughter called, and I realized I still had a lot to look forward to. I got referred to a psychiatrist who explained depression can happen to anyone. Getting help doesn't make me weak. It makes me stronger. I just wish it made me better at fishing.
Mental health care is working for Diego. See what it can do for you at mentalhealthcareworks.org. A message from the American Psychiatric Association Foundation.
Hey everybody, it's Todd Alball. Tuesday from noon till 3, we are live from Chippewa Falls and Tuesday Tangents with Luke Mathers and more. Don't miss on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're tapped in to the issues affecting the Valley and all of Wisconsin. Consider us the bartenders of friendly local talk. This is 93.5 The Tap.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's Tuesday. That means Tuesdays with Sandy Williams, my co-host. Sandy, I know I said we're going to talk about Ukraine, but I would be remiss if I didn't get your thoughts on Donald Trump basically saying to NATO, you're not paying your bills, so we need to let things happen to you. Well, here's a guy who didn't pay his own bills, Sandy, for a long time, putting pressure. What are your thoughts about that statement? Should we just ignore that?
Well, first of all, when he talks about paying bills, they don't have a bill to pay. The obligation that was entered into by the members of NATO was that there was a promise or a vision that each of them would spend 2% of their GDP on their military defense. It's not that they send money to NATO, it's that they're supposed to spend money at home. And the fact is that in this past year, the members of NATO, on average, paid 2% of their GDP for military defense. Now, the fact is that there are some that paid more and some that paid less, but on average, they are meeting that 2% standard. So there's sort of a confounding of principles when he's talking about being a delinquent on bills, number one. Number two, He's basically made it clear that he's not a fan of NATO anyway, okay? And that he doesn't necessarily think NATO has a place anymore, which, you know, ignores the fact that NATO has, since World War II, managed to keep the peace within Europe, which was one of the main purposes of NATO. There were two purposes. One was to unify Europe militarily so that they would not turn upon one another, since the United States had been dragged into two world wars in the space of two generations because of Europe turning on itself. And number two, it was there to protect against the Soviet Union and to be a counterforce to the Soviet Union. While the Soviet Union has broken apart, the purpose of you keeping Europe unified remains. And I think that Trump just isn't a student of history. He doesn't have a recall for the purposes behind NATO. The fact that we set it up for the very purpose of having the United States be more or less in control of a unified Europe, kind of an alliance that would keep the peace in Europe and would give us control. It also set up a huge client state, right? Because who does NATO buy almost all their munitions from?
Us.
The United States.
Right.
And so now what Trump is actually calling for is for these countries to start spending money themselves on their own munition sources. And lo and behold, who's going to be the primary beneficiary of this? Well, Airbus, the main competitor to Boeing, and the other versions of McDonnell Douglas that exist in Europe and not in the United States. So, you know, right now the United States is receiving a lot of orders from NATO for its munitions, and it's buoying our economy. But in the long run, creating an independent European military, Macron, as you can remember when Trump first talked about this, Macron quickly said, yes, let's develop a European military. And I think the Defense Department and the Pentagon quickly quickly went into Trump's office and said, no, you don't want that. Okay. So this all is just basically ignorant talk, and it's dangerous talk, because leaving countries like Latvia and Estonia out to dry could have a self-fulfilling prophecy. Those countries were, in fact, part of the Soviet Union, all right?
Sandy, so you've kind of already answered the next question I was going to ask you, is if he really understood the impact of what it is he's talking about.
Well, I think, basically, the man doesn't. Everything revolves around Donald Trump, and all he can understand is the implications, whatever he has to say, has for Donald Trump, okay? And the implications of what he's saying with respect to NATO and the implications of what's going on now with respect to aid for Ukraine is fraught with risk for the United States with respect to the ability of the rest of the world to rely on the United States. I was not in concordance with the strategies and policies that were adopted prior to the Ukraine invasion by Russia with respect to Ukraine and NATO. And I do believe that it stirred the pot with respect to NATO and with respect to Ukraine and Russia. And that stirring of the pot might well have been a primary contributor to the invasion of Ukraine by Russia. But it all happened. And we stood behind Ukraine. We gave them the Dutch courage by saying, we've got your back, for them to negotiate or not to negotiate with Russia with respect to the negotiations that were ongoing in 2020 and 2021. The invasion occurred. We start pouring money and support into Ukraine to the extent that we have permitted them to defend themselves for 2 years and to suffer hundreds of thousands of casualties, primarily because we gave them the lifeline to do this. If we hadn't given them the lifeline, there would have been a much earlier consequence, a much earlier settlement with Russia, the loss of far fewer lives, okay? But no, we were there. And now we're going to pull the plug on it because the local political scene in the United States has lost interest or has decided that it's domestically attractive to do so. That will have a huge impact on the rest of the world's ability to count on the United States.
You know, Sandy, you talk, it's been, Russia and Ukraine have been mixing it up for 10 years.
Yes, 2014 was the beginning of essentially a quiet form of warfare, but ongoing warfare in the Donetsk region, eastern Ukraine.
And we didn't get engaged or involved at all during those first years. And so when we made the decision to go in, I guess the point I'm trying to make with you, Sandy.
Well, there is a question, and there are recordings, et cetera. I think it's pretty clear that the United States was, at least the CIA and our intelligence agencies, were involved in the Maidan Revolution in 2014 that unseated Yanukovych, the pro-Russian-leaning president of Ukraine, who had been elected in a national election just prior to that, in a matter of months prior to that. He was unseated in a coup, and so I think there is definite evidence that the United States played an indirect role in supporting the coup.
So when you look at all of this, Sandy, and again, going back to your sentiments early on in this, and you know that's for anybody to hear on the archives of this show, going back 2 years ago, and the things that you had to say about this before we really stepped into this, when you hear and see people like the Speaker Mike Johnson and others knowing what's at stake and saying, oh, we've got to go to recess, and knowing, basically turning a deaf ear to what they know is coming. And you can't say Democrats on this. This is clearly a segment of the Republican Party that has made a decision, Sandy, that we're done.
Well, and it's a turnabout. I mean, where was Mike Johnson in 2021 arguing about whether aid should be provided to Ukraine.
Well, nobody
in 2022.
Even knew who Mike Johnson was.
I know, but
part.
I mean,
right.
but I mean, these people who are now talking about pulling the plug, the right thing would have been to stand up then and to discuss whether or not we should be providing support. But no, they were there probably casting their votes in favor of whatever it was needed to do to provide the support to Ukraine, which has been provided.
So let me ask you your thoughts on whether or not Donald Trump is playing a role in this decision.
Well, of course he is. I mean, he's clearly, this is consistent with what he's saying publicly, as well as what he apparently is doing privately. Yes, he's definitely playing a role in this.
You know, because he somehow is leading people to believe that he's going to come in and fix it all.
Well, what he said is that he can come in and settle this war in a matter of days.
Right.
Well, I think Putin has also described the way it can be settled in a matter of days, which is that when the Western aid is withdrawn, Ukraine will have to settle in a matter of days. I mean, there's no way to settle this war in a matter of days without it being a compromise which is currently unacceptable to Ukraine. It is the compromise, however, that I was talking about that was likely before the invasion, which is that Donetsk would be ceded to Russia.
Let's go back to the phone lines. Tom, quickly.
I think we can all see how dangerous Vladimir Putin is now, and apparently they must have had other information about how dangerous he really was. And even early on, Donald Trump, basically, Vladimir Putin is his banker. He would just give him the keys to the kingdom, basically, and we would be done as a country, in my belief. And also on top of that, look at Navalny. You don't have to look any further. Vladimir Putin basically just took out a person that was running against him and was a populist. And this guy basically was already poisoned. He was already, 1 month before their so-called election, and they go and kill him. That's sending a message to all those people. Don't go out and vote.
Hey.
Don't go out and vote.
Vladimir Putin is the devil. Thank you very much for the call. Let me ask you something, Sandy, about that. Yeah, we know what happened there, and we it's clear to say that we know that Vladimir Putin had something to do with that. What can the United States do about any of that?
Well, we can't, unfortunately. But I think Putin is sort of the devil. I think he's done badly for the Russian people. He's masterful. He has strong support amongst the Russian people. There are people that have been, for many decades, many, many decades, through the period of the Soviet Union, become inured to the kind of politics that results in the death and assassination of dissent. And so, it's a sorry thing that they have to put up with it, and they will put up with it. The problem is that the United States doesn't have a sound grip on its policies in the Eastern European arena in particular. And yes, I think Putin is the devil. No, I don't think Putin has an intention to take over Poland or any other things. I think that the difficulty he's had dealing with Ukraine, which lies essentially within Russia, and its neighbors, suggest that he wouldn't be so foolish as to do those other things. But, this man is not a good man.
All right, 844-967-2789. You're tuned in to the Earl Ingram Show. It's Tuesday. That means Tuesdays with my co-host, Sandy Williams.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, Eau Claire, Chippewa Valley's home for The Todd Allball Show.
The Todd Allball Show.
I'm Trigvi Olsen. Steven from Green Bay. Go ahead.
The city of Green Bay is one of the best places in Wisconsin to live. Plenty of people that are Wisconsin nice.
Totally agree. Green Bay is kind of swing territory between the two parties, but people in Green Bay work together. I mean, people aren't asking themselves, am I wearing a red hat or a blue hat? They're wearing green and gold hats.
The Todd Allball Show. Weekdays, noon till 2, on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
My name is Juanita Segura, and I was diagnosed in November of 2014 with non-small cell lung cancer. Biomarker testing was a turning point for me. By working with my oncologist, we were able to determine the most appropriate treatment plan. My fear was I wasn't going to be here to see my children grow up. That gave me hope, knowing that I have that chance. And I did. Visit noonemissed.org for more.
A public service message from Longevity Foundation.
This is 93.5 The Tap.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Tuesday. That means Tuesday's with my co-host, Sandy Williams. So, Sandy, why the U.S. will veto a U.N. vote demanding a ceasefire in the Israeli-Hamas war? This war is starting to really get to a point, Sandy, where people across the world are looking at it and saying, I think the number the last time I looked was 28,000. They basically leveled Gaza. There's nowhere for these people to go, Sandy. And I know that...
Well, in fact, Egypt is building up its border and putting up a double wall there to try and make it impossible for the Gazans to be pushed into or otherwise move into Egypt. Egypt doesn't want to inherit the problem.
No, they can't. How can they afford to deal with that? They really can't. And it's not that I would say that Egypt is unmindful and not caring about those people, but clearly it's to bring in 2 million people is more than a notion for any nation, right? So where we are, Sandy, with this is they've leveled Gaza, and these hostages are still out there. And even Hamas has offered, hey, let's do a ceasefire. Let's work on this. Let's try to figure what's happening right now. For the most part, Sandy, is not going to be the solution. By continuing this, they're not going to get the hostages back by continuing this, and then to invade, what is the name of that?
Rafah.
Yes.
Well, Rafah is the city that's right on the border with Egypt, and there is a Rafah gate that is actually the way you get from Gaza into Egypt, and it's sort of the southernmost point, and it's a bit like herding cattle. They've pushed the people of Gaza to the south. Now they're all sort of stacked up in Rafah, and now they're talking about a ground invasion of Rafah, which would obviously be fraught with risk for all of the civilians there, unless they can figure out a way to around that. And I know the United States has indicated that they're pushing Israel to make sure that there is some form of strategy to provide safety to the civilians in Rafah. I think they're also now discouraging Israel from in carrying out its ground invasion of Rafah. It's surprising. The UN resolution, first of all, UN resolutions aren't self-effectuating. So how you vote on it is just cosmetic, okay? And it's interesting to me that the United States still cosmetically finds it necessary to veto a resolution calling for a ceasefire. Obviously, it's they're doing that to show unity with Israel. But at the same token, I think the rest of the world, many people in Israel, lots of people in the United States, would like to see the United States exert a great deal of influence on Israel to move in the direction of non-military solution here to the rest of the problem.
Well, you know, Sandy, I don't know if it was this past Sunday on Meet the Press, or it might have been earlier, and Benjamin Netanyahu was being interviewed, and he clearly said, you know, they're going to do what they have to do, regardless of what America is saying, and that's to eradicate Hamas. And so, you know, Joe Biden is in a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation, because if he refuses to financially support Israel, he stands a chance on having people who would probably vote for him turn against him. He's also going to face that same other side of the coin by having, you know, Muslims and Palestinians in this nation and others who, and younger people who say the direction that he's going with this to continue to support Israel in this war, they're not supporting that and they're willing to not vote. So where does he go with this?
Well, I think he's trying to walk that tightrope. I think he's talking about exerting influence on Israel to abate its military movements and ground invasion, and to work in the direction of humane resources being provided to Gaza. He's talking about all that. I presume we're doing all that. But, you know, the problem is that Israel, in many respects, politically, is a tail that wags the dog, and they have a great deal of, and Netanyahu knows they have there's a great deal of sort of leverage that Israel has in the United States. But I think that Biden's going the right direction on this. I think he is in fact exerting a great deal of influence. I think it's coming forth in the fact that there have been ceasefires. I think Israel has been conducting itself with more care in what it's been doing. But you know, I think the world wants, in particular, there to be a movement towards a two-state solution. And Netanyahu has been unusually direct and adamant about how negative he is about a two-state solution. And I think in the long run, that's going to do Netanyahu in.
You know, Sandy, the United Nations is saying that there's a crisis, starvation, that, you know, people with sicknesses and all of those things that go along with the war, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Gaza is the site of a humane tragedy. And there is disease and starvation. A significant percentage of the people in the world who are starving are in Gaza.
Yeah, and so that's the part of this that I think the United Nations focuses on. They may not focus on the other aspects of it, but they do see a humanitarian crisis that is building and getting worse every day. And I think at the root of that and at the end of that is where, you know, unfortunately, Biden is going to sink or swim.
Well, like I said, it's a tightrope. And I do think his administration is trying to walk it rather effectively. But in the long run, it is like you said, a rock and a hard spot. And I don't think there's any way to get out of that position without some downside. And I think, therefore, that if that's the case, then I think he probably will become more forthright and more vehement about trying to exercise pressure on Israel to be more moderate.
All right. 844-967-2789. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. Up next, news, weather, and sports.
For you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Now that Wisconsin has new legislative district boundaries, Republicans say they're eager to look ahead. State Representative Tony Kurtz tells Civic Media's Phil Nee work can begin on the 2024 campaigns.
Our clerks, who work so very hard on all our elections, now it gives them time to do what they need to do to marry up their voting precincts with who's going to be in those areas.
Kurt says he does not expect a lawsuit to try to delay the new maps from taking effect. The new maps will mean a lot of changes and a lot of tough decisions for state lawmakers. WisPolitics reports 21 state lawmakers are now drawn into the same districts, including 6 in the Senate and 11 in the Assembly. Some lawmakers say they plan to move in order to try to stay in office. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Now here's what you need to know closer to home.
For WCFW News, I'm James Kelly. The city of Augusta is looking for someone to buy their local family clinic. The clinic is currently operated by Previa, which has announced it will be completely shutting down its Chippewa Valley operations by June 30th. According to a WEAU report, the city of Augusta is working with the bank that owns the building to create favorable terms for a new potential buyer. President of the Augusta IDC, Kathy DePask, says one potential plan could include free rent for the first few months that a new organization moves in. A Marshfield-based counseling service is planning to expand to Eau Claire once it finds a space. According to a WEAU report, Gateway's counseling service is asking for help from Eau Claire residents to find a place suitable for their operation. They need a space with at least 5 or 6 offices and a large conference room for their group services. The expansion comes at a critical time for Chippewa Valley residents as the impending HSHS and Previa closures threaten to remove a number of important healthcare options from the area. And that's what you need to know. For WCFW News, I'm James Kelly.
Nightline with Pete Schwaba.
Civic Media's Rich LoCascio. Could you introduce me as a wrestler right now? You could call me like the Punching Bag or the Patsy or something.
From Green Bay, Wisconsin, the Punching Bag, Pete Schwaba.
Now I'd be looking across the ring at my opponent's eyes getting really wide as he got ready to wail on me.
Nightline with Pete Schwaba. Weeknights 7 till 9 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
I'm Pete with the 60-second Showbiz Beat. American Idol judge Lionel Richie admitted he made a mistake by leaving Madonna out of the We Are the World production in the mid-1980s. The music legend appeared last week on Jimmy Kimmel Live to discuss his new Netflix documentary, The Greatest Night in Pop. Richie said there was only a half a line to sing, so the voice had to be very recognizable. Therefore, they chose Cyndi Lauper over Madonna. When Kimmel told Richie he felt it was a mistake leaving Donna out and not using both singers, Richie agreed. Such a shame. It could have really put Madonna on the map. The Greatest Night in Pop is available on Netflix. Amazon founder Jeff Bezos and girlfriend Lauren Sanchez were seen dining with another couple over Peking duck. It was in a Miami strip mall food court, so no reservations were necessary. Bezos admitted the place wasn't his first choice, but Zavarro had a really long line. For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with me, Pete Schwaba, every night between 7 and 9 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Sunny and a little warmer today. We'll get to 46 for a high this afternoon. The wind will be from the south at around 5 to 15. Tonight, mostly cloudy. A little more fog possible overnight tonight. Our low 27 tomorrow. A little patchy fog in the morning, then mostly sunny 47 on Thursday. Sunshine with a high of 46. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Outside now, it's 33.
Covering all the news that affects you with humor and a unique perspective. Matinair on Air with Jane Matinair. Weekdays 10 till noon on the Talk of Eau Claire, 93.5 The Tap, and on the Civic Media app.
Do you ever get tired of one-sided conversations filled with mean-spirited rhetoric? It's time to listen and engage. Join the Rational Revolution with me, Chris Alfheim, Saturday afternoons at 2 and Sunday afternoons at 1 on the Talk of Eau Claire, 93.5, The Tap, and the Civic Media app.
Tap into what Chippewa Falls, Eau Claire, and the Chippewa Valley is talking about today. This is 93.5, The Tap, online at thetap.fm.
We find ourselves in a world of our own.
As we stroll along together, holding
to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. You know, Sandy, we can talk about there's so many different things happening this year, and it have been going on over the last, you know, 5-6 years. You and I have been around a while. We've seen a lot of different things that kind of make you stop and pause and ask about the fabric of our nation and where we are right now. I was talking with the Democrats on last night, and I was saying that you just, you know, maybe I'm a pessimist. I don't know. But Sandy, if we don't get this fixed, and somehow I don't think we can get it fixed, even let's say Donald Trump loses the election, we're not going to get it fixed by him losing, because there'll be his minions aren't going to let it go. And so, Sandy, how do we begin to build the right dialogue to heal a wounded nation based on these political issues that are going to tear the nation asunder if we're not able to sit down and have dialogue?
Well, I think the real problem is that, at least from Donald Trump's standpoint, his issue is, and his followers have adopted the notion that the issue is Donald Trump, okay? Is Donald Trump being treated fairly? Is Donald Trump, you know, it's all about Donald Trump. It's not about the policies he would implement. In fact, when it comes time to talk about that, he just says, don't worry, I'll fix it, okay? Don't bother me with details, and I won't bother you with any because, you know, I'm Donald Trump. It's almost like a superhero kind of a person. His following has developed Donald Trump into a martyred superhero. And that context doesn't really support dialogue, okay, or conversation or healing, because when you turn a group into essentially a cult of personality, you've gotten rid of and moved away from talk about substantive issues. So all that we hear about now from Donald Trump is about Donald Trump. Is he being treated fairly? Is he the subject of a witch hunt? Is he going to be allowed to bring back the glory that is and what will be whatever Donald Trump can create? You know, it's a cult of personality. It's not a discussion of policy. It's not a discussion of a disagreement over anything. Donald Trump, it's Donald Trump against the United States of America institutions.
You know, Sandy, I saw the speaker, Mike Johnson. He went down to Mar-a-Lago on yesterday. The Speaker of the House to sup with a guy who is a candidate. And then he gave the thumbs up with Trump as if I'm here taking orders. It, even just the look of that doesn't make any sense. That the Speaker of the House of the United States government has to go down and basically kiss the ring of a guy who's, you know, running for president. It makes no sense.
Well, like I said, and there's nothing in the articles that would suggest there's a discussion of policy, okay? Any sort of policy at all. It's just that he's supplicating to Donald Trump because Donald Trump has become almost at a liturgical level of sanctity with respect to those people who feel strongly about Donald Trump. And like I said, I think the problem is that it's the dark state. It's the witch hunt. All of that is what Donald Trump is running on, and he's getting people to buy into it. All of that is running against the institutions of the government of the United States of America.
So people have chosen this guy over our government because he says our government's no good.
And the proof of the government being no good is that it's after him.
Right.
You know, that he didn't get elected in the last election, ergo election was rigged, meaning that somehow a dark force was out there causing it not to go the way it otherwise would have gone, which would have been his victory. And then two, all of what happens to him is not his fault, not his doing, not the result of submitting fraudulent appraisals to banks and what have you. It's because he's the subject of the martyred subject of a witch hunt. People are out to get him.
You know, the other part of it, Sandy, is they're not thinking clearly. I think many of the MAGA supporters, because you hear lame duck president, a guy with only one term left. And every second term president is considered lame duck, right?
Yep.
Not going to be able to get anything accomplished. Trump is going to come in as a lame duck.
Well, he's already talking about how he's going to figure out a way to get around that. Of course, at that point, when he runs again, he'll be older even than Joe Biden is now running for president if he ran for another term after a term were he to be elected in 2024. But, I think that it's a sorry thing, because I think what's happened is that he's been able to play the chord of the frustration of people with respect to government. And he's played it very effectively. And in the process, he's destroying everyone's faith in government. And that is a very big problem, a much bigger problem than Donald Trump's personality, a much bigger problem than whatever you can say about Donald Trump personally or politically. The problem is that he is running against the institutions of the United States of America.
Well, you know, Sandy, he's not the only person who doesn't believe in government. What, 50% of the people don't vote? So there's already a large segment of the population that doesn't agree and doesn't believe that our government serves any purpose.
Well, I don't think not voting is that. I think not voting, however, is a sign of frustration or futility. And so there's a lot of frustrated people who feel futile with respect to what it is their government does, and that's pretty easy to convert into cynicism about government. And, we should understand that, you know, I don't know how many people are counted as being Trump supporters, diehard Trump supporters, but it might be 40 million or 50 million people. We have 335 million people in this country. So it's by no means a majority. It's just a very powerful vocal force. And it's very active, so that it apparently, much like the Tea Party, was able to frighten candidates into submission and worry about running against a primary opponent. The main thing that Trump has going for him is that there seem to be plenty of people lying in the weeds who are Trump supporters who are willing to come forth and indicate that they'll run as a Trump candidate. Do I remember Earl Campbell?
Yes. Yes. Well, you know, Sandy, I would say to you, no, it was, what was the guy's name? It wasn't Earl Campbell. He was, I forgot the guy's name, who ran Dallas Cowboy running back, Herschel Walker. Yeah. But I will say to you, Sandy, that it was Herschel Walker.
Oh, it was Herschel Walker, not Earl Campbell.
Not Earl Campbell.
Oh, I had that wrong.
Yeah, but that's okay. But here's
they both might have been number 34.
No, but here's the thing, Sandy. And our phone lines are open at 844-967-2789. People don't talk about government. It's not something that in our daily lives we spend time talking about. The government is something that's out there, that we are living our lives, and we don't ever look at the government as something, an entity that makes a difference in our lives. We don't see it, even though it's there, law enforcement, and other things. But people don't see government as an assistance to their lives. They see it as a detriment. And So how do we fix that? How can government be a better, find a better way to sell itself? Because I think that's what needs to happen in a way. Government's got to figure out a way to sell itself to the American people.
Well, I agree with you. You know, I think the institutions, broadly speaking, people are frustrated. I think that the notion that government was your enemy was fostered in the 80s, Reagan. The idea of strangling government of money was a pretty convenient thought because it came with tax reductions in Grover Norquist. And that has, it has sort of, there's the vintage of that. It has brewed and stewed and to the point where I think now a substantial number of Americans teeter on the brink of saying, look, government's is a ineffective and something that I want less of, not more of. And government has had trouble explaining itself to the people, you know, all the ways that it is actually there to protect us. I think the legacy of the FDR period is waned, okay? And the notion that what he brought to us was government for us, to support us, to protect us, has waned and we've lost sight of it. The deal no longer looks the same.
Yeah, and you know, Sandy, and the older our generation gets, the more removed from that our nation becomes. And so, you know, in the coming years and decades, it'll be even further away. And my fear is that there'll be people who, and even you kind of can see it right now, who believe the government is a waste of our dollars. It's a waste of our time. It's intrusive. It is something we don't need. And yet they don't understand that throughout every aspect of our life, government is intertwined.
Well, you know, it leads us to do things like to attack the FBI, but not talk about what the alternative is or what's the fix, or to attack whatever, you know, the various institutions of government. And my question is, what's the end game here? Okay, there's something wrong with it. Shouldn't we fix it? But we never get around to the fix talk. We only get around to the talking about what's wrong with it.
Well, and to constantly say we've got the greatest government in the world. And there are citizens and others who will say that, and they used to say that more. Let me ask you, patriotism and government, shouldn't they be one and the same?
Well, you would think that a patriot would be standing behind his government, but patriotism has become something different than that. It's almost... There's a whole group of people who view themselves as patriots who are standing against the government.
Right.
You know, view the government as an intrusion on what they think is truly American. And so, you know, Americanism and patriotism have become sort of a congealed notion that has little or nothing to do with the government of the United States and has everything to do with the person's vision of what it is that America is like or should be like. The outgrowth of this has become like Christian nationalism.
Sandy, I want you to hold that thought. We're gonna delve a little deeper into that. 844-967-2789. You know, it's Tuesdays with my co-host Sandy Williams.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, the Chippewa Valley's home for Up North News Radio.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
Jim from Racine, welcome. What do you got for us?
Hey, Jim.
I voted for Reagan back in the day. I guess I've been supporting more of the Democratic Party for the last 40 years or so, but people don't say, oh, man, she's a Republican, she's a Democrat, she's whatever. I'm a human being. All these other things aren't important. We need to unite against a bigger threat. I think the threat is us becoming a dictatorship. They want us to fail.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Weekday afternoons from 4 until 6 on your local civic media radio station and on the app.
Now. We tend not to think about now. We dream about tomorrow, relive yesterday. But right now in front of us is victory over cancer. Right now, cancer research funded by the V Foundation is leading to better treatments and saving lives. Victory over cancer is there for the taking by you, because today's cancer research is tomorrow's victory. Learn more at V.org.
Don't give up. Don't ever give up.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap.
You kind of scared yourself, you turn and run. But if you have a change of heart, Ricky, don't lose that number. You don't want to call nobody else. Send it off in a letter to yourself.
Welcome back to what is the last few minutes of the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. Let's go to Bill from Oconomowoc. Good morning to you, Bill. Your thoughts?
Good morning, Earl. Do a super job, you and Sandy. I got to ask you guys, don't you think this year, 2024, spring or late winter, whatever you want to call it, we have more hope for our country than we've had in a long time? The house of cards of, you know, supporting a sexual predator and 91 felonies and all that, that's falling apart. That's just literally eroding in front of our eyes, self-destructing.
Do you think
I think 2020...
Bill, do you really think that the Donald Trump bandwagon is falling apart?
Oh, absolutely. I think I can prove it, Earl.
Okay, go ahead.
So I can prove it.
Go ahead.
If you watch his promotions or his rallies and all that, they're not gaining strength. They're losing strength.
That's true.
They'll do everything to create an illusion of a giant rally when it's a joke, when it's a just laughing joke. And then when you go on, you turn on national news, or let's go to Fox or whatever, national news, and our country is still addressing a man as capable of running for president with that kind of baggage, that's an insult to our intelligence, Earl. Everybody. And sooner or later, in my classes, I attack it and talk about it, even though it's Christian leadership. And I said, we cannot fall for a man like that. They're not arguing with me anymore. So I want your opinion, Earl. You know a lot more people than I'll ever know, Earl. And Sandy, what do you guys think?
Sandy?
Well, I can hope. I can hope. But he still seems to have a lot of traction. He still seems to be locked in to get the nomination. And so I think what he is doing, however, is continuing to display the real self that he is, and to present to more people, if they have their eyes open, the dangers that he presents.
You know, Bill said he kind of sees the turning of the corner in our nation, and it's always good to be hopeful.
Well, we'll see how Nikki Haley does. I mean, you know, she's the lone.
She's probably going to
lose in South Carolina.
She's probably going to bow out. I got to think.
Well, I'm not sure of that. I think she's got plenty of money behind her, and I think she's increasing her vehemence with respect to her direct attacks. So I'm kind of thinking she's not going to bow out very quickly. But, I think I'm going to read this again. Tom called about this, and this is something Alexander Hamilton wrote long ago. Okay, he's one of the founders, one of the people that particularly conservatives like to lean on as being one of the prescient few who knew what was in store for the country. He wrote this: when a man unprincipled in private life, desperate in his fortune, bold in his temper, despotic in his ordinary demeanor, known to have scoffed in private at the principles of liberty, when such a man is seen to mount the hobby horse of popularity, to join in the cry of danger to liberty, to take every opportunity of embarrassing the general government and bringing it under suspicion, to flatter and fall in with all the nonsense of the zealots of the day, it may justly be suspected that his object is to throw things into confusion that he may ride the storm and direct the whirlwind. Now, it's almost like he knew what was going to happen 250 years later. But, you know, those what is described there is Donald Trump.
Those
scoffed in private at the principles of liberty to join in the cry of danger to liberty. You know, that's his cry about the deep state and the fact that he's being attacked is he's saying that that's an attack on liberty. His reaction to the death of Navalny was to turn it around on himself and to say, when I saw the death of Navalny, it made me think of what's happening to me and the country.
So what people need to get out of what you just read, Sandy, is the fact, a warning.
You know, yeah, this is Alexander Hamilton's warning, but we have people who knew him firsthand, Liz Cheney.
Right.
Most of the secretaries in his cabinets, many of the people who served him privately, prior chief of staff, all of these people say, look, this man should not be elected president.
Yeah. The hope, Sandy, is that the clarion call is answered and that people really understand that. But thank you as always. Thank you for a great show. Thank you, Calvin. Up next, Greg Baugh and Jane Matinere on Matinere On Air. Hey, get out and enjoy what it's supposed to be 52 degrees. See you guys on tomorrow. Sandy, that.
Everyone knows what's on tap. It's the Chippewa Valley. We're talking about everything that's on tap in your world today. 93.5 The Tap. Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
It's 2024. Welcome to Matinere On Air, coming to you live across the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Jane Matinere.
And I'm Greg Baugh.
Join us Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to noon as we break down the news and share some laughs along the way.
We're talking to politicians, we're talking to community leaders, and we're talking to anyone who has a story.
And we occasionally get a visit from an umbrella cockatoo. Join us for Matinere On Air, Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to noon.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire, and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. The U.S. is expected to veto a Gaza ceasefire resolution up for a vote at the U.N.